Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of Diagnosing a Killer. I'm Kenna.
And I'm Coel.
How's it going?
You know, this is interesting. It's new for us. We actually can see each other, which is nice.
Yeah, we can see the nonverbal cues now that we couldn't in the last episode. That's awesome. Yeah, we're getting better at this whole recording in different rooms thing, but I think it's going well.
Yeah, I can definitely see how it would be beneficial in the future whenever we do want to record, and maybe one of us is on vacation, or maybe we don't live together anymore. Like, let's face it, that's going to happen.
It's going to happen eventually, so we might as well learn how to do it now in order to avoid not having issues in the later. Well, today is the start of our ginormous three-parter that we have been teasing for a number of weeks, that I have been researching for a number of weeks, and I am so excited to get it out there. It is a request by listener Amy Jane. So thank you, Amy, for this request. We hope that we do it justice. And before we get into this long-ass part one, would you like to give everybody our social media handles?
Sure, you can check us out on social media anywhere at Diagnosing a Killer, other than X, formerly known as Twitter, which is at Killer Diagnosis. We also have a PayPal, Venmo, Cash App if you want to support us monetarily. We also have 4 tiers on our Patreon now. Tier 1 gets ad-free mental breakdown episodes. Tier 2 gets access to all ad-free episodes. And our Tier 3 and 4 Patreon members will receive an added bonus episode every month towards the end of the month. And yeah, so check that out.
Nice job. And if you want to email us or send us a DM for a request on cases, we do write those down and we will get to them hopefully at some point soon after you send them.
Yeah, after your three-parter.
Yes. All right, are you ready for this? Yes. I've been wanting to tell you for so long.
I'm excited.
Okay, so today we are going to be talking about Fred and Rose West.
Fred and Rose West?
Yes, it's a British case.
It's a British case? Oh, I love these.
Content warning. This episode contains depictions of the brutal deaths of children, incest, bestiality, graphic sexual and physical abuse of children, graphic descriptions of illegal medical procedures, serious symptoms of mental illness, grooming of young children, suicide, dismemberment of adults and children after death, and necrophilia. If this episode is not for you, we encourage you to find another one of our episodes. Remember, your mental health is very important, and we love you.
Love you.
Bye. Ready?
Yes.
Here we go. Frederick Walter Stephen West was born on September 29th, 1941, at Brickerton Cottage, Much Markle, Herefordshire, is how you say that? Herefordshire? Whoa. Yeah, I know. I'm not from there. He would be born to parents Walter Stephen West and Daisy Hannah Hill, and the family was known as being poor farm workers. The family would be described as close-knit and very protective over one another. Walter West was known as being a disciplinarian, while Daisy was known as being very overprotective of her children. Already, the gung-ho parents, we see that.
Yeah, right.
In 1946, when Fred was around 4 years old, the family would move to Moorcart Cottage, where Walter would pick up work as a milking herdsman and harvest hand.
A milking herdsman?
Yeah, I think he just, like, milked cows and he was, like, a ranch hand, but they call it a harvest hand.
A harvest hand.
Ooh. Yes, which I think is adorable. The cottage that the family moved into was known to not have any electricity, and the family was known to use a log fire to keep warm during the winter months. Over the years, Walter and Daisy would have 8 children altogether, but unfortunately, 2 of them would pass away at a very young age, causing the family to grow up with 6 children.
Okay, so, and when was this again? What was the year?
In the 40s.
So, yeah, I mean, people get sick, don't have access to healthcare, stuff like that.
Right. Yes. Although he was one of six children, Fred was known as being his mother's favorite and a real mama's boy. Even though he was super close with his mother, Fred was also known to lean on his siblings for friendship as well during his childhood. The children were expected to perform assigned chores as soon as they were old enough, and all of them were also asked to engage in seasonal work for the family. So
seasonal work.
Right. One of those families, it feels like they kind of had a lot of kids because they needed a lot of help.
Yeah.
The girls would be assigned in picking hops and strawberries for cooking, while the boys were tasked with harvesting wheat and hunting rabbits.
Hmm.
Sorry, there's a loud noise in the background.
Oh, no.
Needless to say, the children were all shown the necessity of hard work at a young age, as you typically see in ranch families.
Mm-hmm.
Fred would make later claims that he was sexually abused by his mother at the age of 12, that he had engaged in bestiality in his early teens, and that he truly believed during his childhood that incest was normal due to him seeing his father engage in it with his sisters. Escalated quickly.
That escalated so quickly.
Right. And it's like, where's the poop? But then, like, there it is.
There it is. Well, it was so normal, right? They look like such a normal family. Mm-hmm. It was normalized for them. That's sad.
However, with Fred saying all these things, his brother Doug would later refute these claims, stating that Fred just had a wild imagination.
Because imagination make things gets like the best that of him.
Yeah. While a neighbor of Fred's would describe him as, quote, a bit cheeky, a bit mouthy, but that was the way these kids were, end quote, classmates of Fred's would describe Fred as lethargic, dim, scruffy, and regularly in trouble. So he almost has a mask in certain areas of his life. What do you like to say that people can adapt, or they're like chameleons in their environments?
Yeah, I would say so. Like, you know, especially if you grow up in a home that has hostility, I think that it's easy to not want to rock the boat too much. So you kind of very much have, like you said, like a chameleon aspect to yourself because you have to be malleable in order to survive.
Right, right. Now, where was I? Sorry. Fred was barely literate throughout most of his childhood. However, he was known as showing interest in woodworking and art. Needing to continue and support the family, Fred would drop out of school at the age of 15 in December of 1956. Following leaving school, Fred would gain employment as a laborer in Moorcourt Farm, and in 1957, Fred and his older brother John were known to frequent a youth club and socialize with other kids from the next town over.
Socialize, sure, yeah.
It reminds me of Willie Picton and his brother.
Yeah.
the family farm, they bring everyone over. Fred and John, having different accents than the kids in the local area, were quickly dubbed as unintelligent, which is not cool.
Mm.
Right? On top of this, though, Fred was known as aggressively pestering the girls at the youth club and would frequently be seen approaching them quickly only to fondle them before he could stop them. It's not funny. I'm sorry.
That's not funny. That's disgusting. I'd deck a kid.
Oh, I would punch someone so hard. Like, yeah. Don't fucking touch me at all, first of all. And don't touch me inappropriately. Like, oh my God.
What you're saying, like, the imagery is funny. Like, scuttling and then scuttling. But
yeah, exactly. At one point, Fred would approach a girl that actually accepted his advances and the two would engage in sex. Like, she was, like, into it.
And how old was he? Like 12?
He was between the ages of 15 and 16 because he dropped out of school at 15. He's probably 16.
That's right. Yeah.
It would later come out that this girl did not find the experience with Fred satisfying and explained that Fred's primary objective during sex was strictly his own gratification.
Okay.
Which is so gross. Like, get away from me.
That's gross.
That's such a juvenile mindset, though, I feel like, in intercourse or whatever. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I think that, you know, what we've seen so far is that he really hasn't... He's clearly stunted, first of all.
Yeah.
You know, because of the abuse at such a young age. But, yeah, for him to, you know, yeah, it just, there's no real world that he exists in, you know. There's no, it sounds very selfish, I guess, in a way.
Yeah,
that he, like so you said, too. He's only looking for self-gratification.
Mm-hmm. At the age of 17, Fred would get in a motorcycle accident, and from this, he would suffer a fractured skull, a broken arm, and a broken leg. Following the accident, Fred would be unconscious for 7 days.
Oh, damn.
Once he awoke, he was reliant on braces for his legs to help him walk for several months.
Ain't you ever seen a little boy with braces on his legs before?
Right. That's what it reminds me of. Fred would develop severe PTSD from this incident, including an intense fear of hospitals, which understandably so. Furthermore, he would develop a sense of rage in which he would throw fits, for lack of a better term, and he would also have a metal plate inserted into his head from this accident.
Oh, jeez.
Kind of seems like he might have damaged his frontal lobe a little bit.
Oh, great. We love damaging our frontal lobes. That's something that is...
just the greatest.
That I don't want to... Yeah, this is just something that everybody enjoys, having a damaged frontal lobe.
Mm-hmm. And it always turns out great.
It's great, yeah.
2 years later, at the age of 19, Fred would suffer an additional head injury when he tried to grope a girl on the fire escape of a youth club, or the same youth club.
Did she push him off?
In response to this, the girl would punch him, and Fred would fall 2 floors to the ground, landing on his head.
Oh my god.
Like, he could have died.
But it's not funny, but it's like... He just got damage to his frontal lobe. Oh no. Oh my god.
Again.
Again.
Otra vez. In June of 1961, Fred's 13-year-old sister by the name of Kitty told her mother that Fred had been raping her since the previous December. Kitty had kept the sexual assault a secret until this point, excuse me, when she told her mother that she was impregnated by Fred.
Oh my god. This guy's a monster already.
It's horrible. Daisy would call authorities, who would promptly arrest Fred. Upon being arrested, Fred would freely admit that he had been molesting young girls since his early teens, stating, quote, "Doesn't everybody do it?" End quote.
I mean, that's what he was taught. He was taught that's how boys and girls or men and women participate with each other. Like, that's...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's so sick.
He's probably like, wait, that's illegal? Like, in his mind.
I can't do that.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, for this charge, Fred would be tried on November 9th, 1961. Even though she was horrified and disgusted by her son's actions, Mother Daisy agreed to testify on Fred's behalf. Kitty was scheduled to testify against Fred as the victim. However, shortly before her scheduled testimony, she would change her mind and refuse to testify. Because the key witness in the case had dropped out, the entire case would fall apart. Although Fred did not get convicted of any charges, most of his family would disown him following this event. Daisy would ban Fred from the family home, causing him to move into the Much Markle house of his Aunt Violet. So his family's like, I don't want anything to do with you, even though you didn't get convicted of this, you did it, you know, and you're out of here.
Yeah. I mean, they have other kids, so I'm sure.
And he's already in his teens, like late teens. So they probably are like, whatever.
So he went to go live at his aunt's, like, is it like a boarding home?
No, it's just I think it's called Much Markle. That's like the area. That's the name of it.
Oh, okay.
But it's his aunt. Her name is Violet. He moved in with her. Sorry, I lost my mind. I lost my train of thought is what I meant to say.
Don't worry, I just lost my mind for a second there. It's fine. God.
Oh, jeez. Okay, so at this point, it is mid-1962. And Fred had actually reconciled with his parents at this point, but not with any other members of his family who had originally disowned him. They're like, you can forgive him, but we're not going to.
Yeah.
In September of 1962, a 21-year-old Fred would become reacquainted with a woman by the name of Catherine, or Rena, Bernadette Costello. Rena was from Coatbridge, Lanarkshire, and the two had first met at Much Marshall Dance Hall in 1960. I'm sorry I'm butchering these names.
It's fine, you're not
so
British.
This is an old friend of his, her name is Rena, and they just reconnected. The two dated briefly back in 1960, but ultimately separated just a few months after when Rena had returned to Scotland to be with her family. The two would quickly get married just 2 months after reconnecting on November 17th, 1962. Rena was actually pregnant at the time of their marriage, and it was thought that since the father of her child was an Asian man and Rena's family expressed concern for her child being mixed race, that she had left Scotland and returned to England to get away from them. Excuse me. At the time of the wedding, Fred's youngest brother, John, was the only one in attendance. The only one.
Mm-hmm.
No one else. That should be a red flag for Rena. Like, I'm sorry, you have no friends or other family?
Yeah, even, well, he has family. The family just doesn't care for him. That's a red flag.
Right. True. So the couple would originally move into Fred's aunt's home, and then move to Coatbridge, where Fred would pick up work as an ice cream van driver.
Creep.
A man that's molested children in the past.
Yeah, that also checks.
Yeah.
Another red flag.
Rena would give birth to her daughter in March of 1963 and named her Charmaine. To explain the child's mixed race to friends and family, Rena and Fred had claimed that Rena had suffered a miscarriage and that Charmaine was actually adopted by the couple.
Oh, that's so sad.
Because neither one of them were of Asian descent, right? So it wouldn't make sense in their mind to have an Asian descended child unless she was adopted, right? So
I know, but that's messed up though. Like, why?
Oh, it's terrible.
That's still your blood, like,
right? And the little girl's probably like, I don't know, like later in life, I would be fucking pissed to find that out.
A million questions as to like where she actually came from. You know, who are her real parents? Oh, that's sad.
Mm-hmm. Shortly after Charmaine was born, the family would relocate to the Bridgeton district of Glasgow. In July of 1964, Rena would give birth to her and Fred's first child, a girl they named Anna Marie.
A girl. A what?
So sorry.
A what? A girl.
A girl. The family would hire a nanny by the name of Isa McNeil to assist with the children, and neighbors of the family at the time would describe Rena as a considerate mother, quote, struggling to bring up two children, end quote. Mm-hmm. They also noted that Fred seemed to have treated the children quite harshly. Unbeknownst to the neighbors at this time, Fred would keep the girls in the bottom of a bunk bed with bars fitted to the space between the bunks, effectively caging them while he was home.
What?
Oh my God. I mean, it didn't escalate quickly, but, like, just, like, what?
I don't understand. Like, clearly this man has been abusing children his whole life, and how is he able to, like, manipulate a woman with a child? And then ultimately
Well, I don't think she knows his past.
You know, but still, like, I just...
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, Rena.
Well, it's crappy because his past charge, he was never convicted of because they got dropped because of the witness.
Yeah.
You know, or lack thereof, witness testimony. So, as far as the girls being in the makeshift cage, they were actually only allowed to be out of it when Fred was at work, when he wasn't at home.
He was
like,
just
like... what's the mom doing?
He didn't want to be bothered, or what?
Yeah, I think so.
Ugh.
Fred and Rena, around this time, would be introduced to their nanny's friend by the name of Anne McFall. So this is a friend of their nanny, Isa. Anne McFall was 16 years old, and she had recently lost her boyfriend in a workplace accident and was notably going through a depressive patch when she met Fred and Rena. Anne would begin coming around the home a lot, seemingly to keep herself busy and hang out with people that made her happy. Unbeknownst to Rena, Fred was having numerous affairs in the early years of their marriage and even fathered another child with another woman from Scotland.
Is she blind, deaf, and mute? I don't understand what Rena's up to. What is going on here?
I don't really know much about this Rena. I don't know if she was just ignorant or if she was kind of messed up as well and just didn't really care. I don't know.
That's bizarre to me that you don't know what's going on. This isn't like the 1800s where someone's just like has no other choice but to be with any man that will take her.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like,
that's
this is a stretch.
Well, when Rena caught wind of Fred's affairs, rather than divorcing him, she decided that she was going to get even, and she began her own affair with a man called John McLaughlin.
I'm sure Fred does not give a fuck.
Oh, he doesn't care. He's like, thank you, take
I'm sure
her off
he
my hands.
He doesn't fucking care. Right?
Since Rena knew about Fred's extramarital affairs, she did not exactly feel the need to be sneaky about hers. In one instance, Fred would walk in on Rena and John doing the deed, and in response, Fred would punch Rena in the face. Like, what?
Not him, but her.
Yes. This caused Rena to, of course, scream, and also in response, John would punch Fred in the face. Fred would then draw a knife. So this is, like, escalating quickly. Again, we've seen that this whole time.
This is out of control.
Yeah.
I'm sure she was like, oh no, Fred, you walked in on us.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm sure she's trying to make him jealous. Yeah.
Fred would lunge at John with the knife, grazing his abdomen in the process. John would punch Fred once again, which caused Fred to stop his attack altogether. Years later, John would comment on this event, stating, quote, he couldn't tackle a man, but he wasn't so slow in attacking women, end quote. Which is funny.
Well, I mean, that's his forte. He loves to attack women.
And children, yeah. So, despite all this, John and Rena would continue their affair, and John would begin to see more and more scrapes and bruises on Rena as the months would go on. This would obviously enrage John, and each time he would confront Fred, he would beat him in response. Like,
yeah.
It's almost like, it's not funny, but it's almost kind of silly to me. It's like, this seems like it's been multiple times where he confronts Fred and kicks his ass for hurting Rena, but he's not taking Rena away from Fred. It has to probably do with the kids. It has to be.
Yeah.
In another instance, John stated that he witnessed Charmaine, who was just a little older than a toddler at this time, ask Fred for an ice cream from his van. In response, Fred hit Charmaine across the head. And John would kick Fred's ass again for this.
Why would he hit her? He has ice cream.
He doesn't want anything to do with her. He's like, get away from me.
Yeah.
John would state about
this. He's like,
this.
Go back to your cage. Hmm? He's like, go back to your cage.
Seriously. John would state about this incident with Charmaine, quote, any ordinary man would have given the child some ice cream, but instead he smashed her around the head with his hand. He was a violent and sadistic bastard who enjoyed beating up women and kids, end quote. It's just awful. On November 4th, 1965, Fred was driving his van when he accidentally ran over and killed a small boy in Glasgow.
Oh my God.
Fred would be questioned by police, but would ultimately be cleared of any wrongdoing. They, like, deemed it an accident.
Okay.
Yeah. Although he was not held responsible for this, Fred became concerned that the locals would resent him for the accident, locals that he relied on to support his business. That's what you're concerned about?
I mean, he's abusing everyone around him. Yeah. Like, you're worth hating, my dude.
Right. Due to this concern, Fred would make the decision to rent a caravan and move his two children back to Gloucester. Is that how you say that? Gloucester? Gloucester.
Gloucester.
Rena would join Fred and the girls in February of 1966, accompanied by both Isa McNeil and Anne McFall, who all moved into the caravan together. So it's now Fred, his wife, their two children, their nanny, and their nanny's friend.
And he's banging all of them.
You can see where this is going.
This is awful.
I know.
Tell me this guy becomes a cult leader.
Oh, jeez. So shortly after the move, Fred would find employment driving a lorry for a local abattoir. Essentially, he was assisting at a slaughterhouse. I had to Americanize that phrase because I didn't know what that meant.
Okay.
By early 1966, Fred was back to his usual self, and was consumingly domineering over all three of the women in the home. He was known to be prone to violent mood swings, with Rena and Isa taking the brunt of his rage. Fred was known to have attacked Charmaine on multiple occasions as well, and was reported to have begun sexually assaulting her at this time. She's a child. Like, an actual child. Fred would somehow talk Rena into re-engaging in prostitution, as she had done before they got involved, and she would agree to make money for the family.
What the
fuck? I know, it's like all over the place.
No! Oh my god.
At this time, Rena had had just about enough of their relationship, and she would phone John McLaughlin, begging him to come rescue her and the children from Fred.
Did he?
Well, I was going to say, together, Rena, John, and Isa came up with a plan. John and Isa's boyfriend, also named John, would secretly drive to where Rena was and discreetly take her and her children, as well as Isa, back to Scotland. Anne, on the other hand, was not upset with Fred's actions around this time and was actually quite on the opposite side. Again, this is the friend that was 16 when they met. Anne had become infatuated with Fred, who had previously promised to marry her.
Oh my god. What? That's another thing, like, an abuser does. You know, I've seen it in a few cases where, especially when the, well, I guess we saw it in Aaron Caffey and Charlie Wilkinson, right? I mean, he was, like, you know, a few years older than her, and he was able to control and manipulate her on the promise of eventually marrying her. Like, because you're at a formidable year, you know, at that point. That's when you start looking towards things like lifelong companionship and what that looks like for you. You start dating and all that. So, yeah, for sure. Some older gent that's like, I'm going to take care of you, you know, even though he's, like, living out of a fucking van.
Yeah, but he's also, I mean, in her mind, he's established. He has children, so he's a good man. He makes money, you know. In her mind, he's this well-off guy, right? Ugh, it's just gross. So Anne actually did know about this plan to rescue Rena, the children, and Isa, but it's actually thought that she alerted Fred as to what was going to happen. So Fred would actually arrive at the home at the same time as the Johns.
Mm-hmm. Like her prostitute.
Yes.
Sorry, because you said Rena was prostituting. Yeah, so
that is funny.
The Johns sound funny.
But yes, no, John and John. And it was noted at this time that Anne was, quote, oddly calm, end quote, as she told the group that she was just going to stay with Fred and act as the children's new nanny.
Sure.
An altercation ensued between John McLaughlin and Fred, resulting in Fred being hit several times as he was holding on to his two young girls.
Well, that's sad, but also, he's also had a lot of head trauma before.
It's true.
This isn't helping.
Don't hurt him anymore. He's very mentally ill. We can establish that right now, but
let's just duct tape him in some bubble wrap and he'll be okay.
In a padded room. No, that's terrible. So at this point, police were called, and the two Johns, Isa and Rena, would leave the home, Fred threatening to kill Rena should she ever return again.
I'd be like, okay, bye. See ya.
Well, this is now leaving Fred with the two young girls, though, and Anna is with him as well. Mm-hmm. So Rena, like, she's kind of like, no, I don't want to leave my fucking children with you.
Yeah.
So Fred's threat would turn out to be a false claim, as Rena, wanting to make sure that the girls were being cared for, would frequently travel from Scotland to England to visit the girls. Despite initially maintaining her friendship with Anna, Rena slowly began to resent her presence around her daughters. After all, her and Fred were more than just friends at this point. She's not just the nanny, you know?
Yeah, she's gonna be like second mom.
Of course. On October 11th, 1966, Rena would steal belongings from Fred's caravan out of resentment and return to Glasgow. She would be arrested the following month, and on November 19th, Rena would be sentenced to 3 years probation for theft charges. Yeah. Yeah.
Where are your kids gonna go now?
Fred would testify at the hearing like a dumbass. Not like a dumbass, but like, he was like on trial and now he's the one testifying. Oh my god, I'm the victim, you know?
I get to be the victim.
During the trial, he stated that he and Anna were living together, but that she intended to return to Scotland soon. Like, she's not staying forever. She's just the live-in nanny.
I see. Yeah.
Following the trial, Anne would move into another caravan close by, while Rena would still split her time between Scotland and England. Anne would write letters to her family between the years of 1966 and 1967, suggesting that she believed a relationship with Fred could offer her a better life than she had in Scotland. These letters also stated that Anne was trying to persuade Fred to divorce his wife and marry her instead. In July of 1967, 18-year-old Anne, 8 months pregnant, would vanish.
What?
Anne McFall vanished.
Oh my god.
Fred would go on with his life and actually would move Rena back into his home just a month later.
What the fuck?
By the way, the listeners don't know this, but we did a little bit something different with our video and audio, and it's so much better. I can see you like in real time now and hear you in real time, and it's perfect. I love it.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
So now Rena and Fred, living back together, would relocate to the Lake House Caravan Park, where their relationship would vastly improve. Rena would ultimately leave again the following year, however, and would again leave the children in Fred's care. So their relationship improved for just a minute, and then she left again.
Yeah, I thought he said he was going to kill her if she came
back. Exactly. Well, this time, Fred was left to care with the girls alone, but he was reportedly temporarily placing them at this point into the care of Gloucestershire Social Services. And I know that's how you pronounce that because I wrote it phonetically because it's a very big word.
Gloucestershire.
Gloucestershire. So the girls being in the social service care would only go on for a few years. And in early 1969, Fred would meet a girl by the name of Rosemary Letts shortly after her 15th birthday.
Oh my god, no.
Such a creep. Rosemary Pauline Letts, or Rose, was born on November 29th, 1953, in Northam, Devon. Rose was the fifth of seven children born into the poor family of William Andrew, or Bill, Letts, and Daisy Gwendolyn Fuller. Their moms have the same name.
Gwendolyn.
Rose's mother was known as suffering from depression in her adult life, and she would undergo electroconvulsive therapy before and immediately after her pregnancy with Rose.
Okay.
Some people would later argue that the ECT may have caused prenatal development injuries to Rose as a newborn. Which is...
Kenna and I just looked directly into the camera at each other and our faces got closer and closer because we were like, nobody wants to be electrocuted for therapy.
Of course not.
Nobody wants to.
That's so dangerous.
Nobody does that willingly. They're not like, oh, okay, yeah, sure.
Lobotomize me. Thank you.
Frontal lobe.
So Rose's father was also noted as being diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia and was prone to violent behavior and maintaining a domineering presence in the home. Yeah, this is just already a thing.
Well, it's very reminiscent of what Fred experienced with his domineering mother and,
yeah,
you know,
for sure.
Clearly there being trauma and disorders in that family, you know, as well.
Of course. So, growing up, Rose struggled with bouts of aggression and poor performance in school. She would be described as a moody teenager who was prone to daydreaming. And with the household being tumultuous most of the time, Rose's mother Daisy would make the decision to leave Bill, and she would take Rose with her. Rose would attend Cleve School for 6 months while living with her mother, but ultimately, Rose would move back in with her father near Cheltenham, Gloucestershire. And that's that big word again. It was noted that around this time, and most likely in the previous years, Rose and her eldest sister Patricia were being sexually abused by Bill. Once Rose had reached puberty, it became apparent that she was very proud of her developing body. She would reportedly be fascinated by her body and walk around the house deliberately parading naked or semi-naked and showing off her maturing figure. Again, like, this looks, like, this is so bizarre to us, but it's like, that is a child of sexual abuse. Like, you're made to think that you're so sexualized at such a young age. Of course you're going to be like, proud of it when you start looking like a woman, you know?
Right, of course.
Rose was also known to do this parading around intentionally in the presence of her younger brother, Graham. On numerous occasions at the age of 13, Rose was known to sneak into 9-year-old Graham's room at night and sexually assault him and her other younger brother, Gordon.
Oh my God.
Again, it like runs in the family, if you will.
It's a product of, yeah, the environment she grew up
in. Exactly. Traveling alone, Rose was waiting at a bus stop in early 1969 when she encountered a man by the name of Fred West.
Bright Cellars is a monthly wine club that matches you to delicious wines tailored completely to your tastes. Take their personalized 7-question quiz and be paired with wines you are sure to love. You can even improve your matches by rating each wine after you try them. Bright Cellars offers a unique tasting experience, as each bottle comes with tasting notes and pairing suggestions. It's like having your very own sommelier at home. And their expert wine concierge will customize your subscription to fit any lifestyle. Click the link in the show notes for an exclusive offer from Bright Cellars today.
Like I said, Rose had just turned 15 a few months prior, and she was originally turned off by the 28-year-old Fred's unkempt appearance. He's 28.
Ew. Was he bald?
I don't know.
Raymond Fernandez. Right.
This feeling...
And love that I'm dating a bald man. It's just so funny.
That episode, you did say he was bald a bunch. It was pretty funny.
And he's bald.
He's just gross, though, so you can say that.
Yeah, he was gross.
So the disgusted feeling that Rose originally had when she met Fred quickly turned to flattery when Rose noticed that Fred was unapologetically and very openly admiring her appearance, like, sexually. Of course, Rose loved showing off her body, so she loved the attention that she was getting from an older man. Over the next few days, Rose and Fred would see each other again at the same bus stop, and Fred would eventually ask Rose to go on a date with him.
Hmm.
She would initially refuse, but did say that Fred could walk her home.
She's like, no, but let's walk and talk.
Let's go down this dark alley.
Yeah, right. There's a dumpster.
So through their initial conversations, Fred was surprised to find out that Rose had never been in a relationship before because she was overly promiscuous. Fred would gain more trust from Rose when he told her that his ex-wife had abandoned him and his 2 daughters, leaving him to fend for himself. Oh, no.
Oh, poor me.
Through their conversations, Fred was able to discover that Rose had worked at a nearby bread shop. Armed with this information, Fred would persuade an unknown woman to enter the bread shop and give Rose a gift and tell her that a, quote, man outside, end quote, had asked her to present this gift to her. Like, that's fucking creepy. You, like, take it away.
She's like, oh, it's that gentleman outside. And he's like, turns around all creepy.
He's all creepy. He's on all fours.
He's on all fours. He looks like he smells like old urine. He's got like Russell Brand hair. God. He's like,
it's just gross. He's,
lovely day, isn't
like,
it?
He's 28 years old courting a 15-year-old, and she already said no like twice. Mm. And he's like, well, I'll just send her a gift. Like, she can't say no to me. Ugh. So a few moments, after Rose received this gift, Fred would enter the shop and ask her to join him on a date that evening. Rose would accept.
This guy's a loser. Yeah.
Shortly after this date, Rose and Fred would begin a romantic relationship. Rose would begin coming around the Lake House Caravan Park, and she would almost immediately notice that the 2 young girls were clearly being neglected by Fred. She would do her best to take care of the children when she was around, and she would frequently try and encourage Fred to take the girls out to do fun things, even just to go flower picking or something to get them out of the house.
Yeah.
Within weeks of her first meeting Fred, Rose would quit her job at the bread shop in order to become a full-time nanny of Charmaine and Anna Marie.
Oh, that's what he's been doing, right? He's, like, having them be nannies, quote-unquote, and then exploiting
them. Right, a live-in nanny. This decision of Rose to become the nanny would be made when her and Fred came to the agreement that he would provide her sufficient money to give to her parents on Fridays in order for her to pretend that she was still working at the bread shop. So I guess she wasn't technically a live-in nanny, but she was there, like, all during the day. Several months into their relationship, Rose would introduce Fred to her parents, who were pretty thrown by her choice of partner. Rose's mother...
like, this guy looks like a dog.
Rose's mother, Daisy, was unimpressed with Fred, while her father, Bill, was extremely disapproving of their relationship.
Interesting.
Bill would threaten Fred...
Well, he's not a great guy either. Right.
Bill would threaten Fred directly and promise to call social services if he did not end the relationship. Because at this point, like, you gotta think about it. Fred's the adult. Like, Rose doesn't have the ability to consent in this relationship. You are the adult. You need to end the relationship.
Yeah.
Although Rose's parents would forbid their daughter from continuing to date Fred, she would defy their wishes and continue to see him. Who does that sound like?
Aaron, what Kathy. Do you mean? Aaron, Kathy. It's like every other relationship, toxic relationship we've ever casted.
Right. So Rose's parents would make a visit to Gloucestershire Social Services and explain that their 15-year-old daughter was dating a much older man. Not only this, but they also stated that they had heard rumors that their daughter had begun to engage in prostitution at his request.
That sounds familiar too, yeah. Just like Rena. Mm-hmm.
In response to this, Rose was placed in a home for troubled teens in Cheltenham in August of 1969. She would only be allowed to leave under controlled conditions, and when she was allowed to return home to visit her parents on the weekends, Rose would almost immediately go to see Fred. I know. It's like, you don't understand that this guy is bad for you.
Yeah, clearly.
On her 16th birthday, Rose would leave the home for troubled teens and return to her parents' house. She wanted to go see Fred at this point. However, he was serving a 30-day sentence at this time for unpaid fines and theft charges. He's just continuing to commit crimes.
Yeah, because, like, why not? I mean, clearly he's gotten away with it for years at this point, so he's just going to keep going.
Upon Fred's release, Rose would leave her parents' house, without permission, of course, and would move into the flat that Fred was living in. Yeah.
Just like, bye, see you later. I live here now.
Shortly thereafter, Fred would fully retrieve his children from social services because they had to go back when he was in prison, obviously, or in jail. So around this time as well, Rose's father, Bill, would continue making efforts for her to not see Fred anymore. And I guess it was kind of hard to explain, but I guess what transpired through this is that he took her to, like, the doctor to, like, I guess maybe try to prove something. I'm not sure. But either way, in February of 1970... The dad. Doctor determined that Rose was actually pregnant, and in response, she was again placed into social services care.
And she's, like, 15 or 16, right?
Yeah, I think maybe, I don't know, maybe the dad, like, kind of knew that she might be pregnant, and he was trying to get Fred in trouble. Like, look, she's pregnant, she's with this guy, like, that's not cool, you know? However, shortly after being placed into care, Rose would be discharged yet again on March 6th, with the understanding that she would terminate her pregnancy and return to her family. So she told them that she was going to do that. However, this was not the truth, and Rose would quickly move back in with Fred, resulting in Bill telling her that she was not allowed to set foot in his household ever again.
I mean, her dad's a piece of shit.
I'm just going to say it. Like, she's probably like, cool. You
know? Yeah, like, and then she's moving into a home with an abuser that's just as bad, if not worse, than her father. Like, it's just... this poor girl.
She probably thinks that Fred is, like, heads and shoulders above her father, though.
Yeah, you know? But there's a reason that probably deep down she's attracted to him.
Of course, yeah.
Because of that. It's familiar to her.
So 3 months after this, Fred and Rose would leave the flat and relocate to a new home in Gloucester. On October 17th, 1970, Rose would give birth to a daughter that she named Heather Ann. There is actually speculation that the true father to Heather was Bill, and this is still speculated to this day, so that might have been another reason why he took her to the doctor and wanted her to terminate.
Terminate. He's kind of using it twofold, like, oh, this guy's abusing my daughter, clearly she's pregnant, but, like, also terminate the pregnancy because clearly it's mine.
Yeah, clearly it's mine.
Oh, my God.
So 2 months after the birth of their daughter, Fred would be imprisoned once again on charges of theft. He would remain in prison until June 24th, 1971, which was a six-month total sentence, in which Rose was left to care for all three of the girls. Keep in mind, Rose is just 17 at this point. Yes. So during the time that Fred was incarcerated, Rose would begin telling Charmaine and Anna Marie to refer to her as their mother.
Ew.
You can just call me mom.
Be like, automatic. Just call me mom. Mm-hmm. I'm the only mom that you have, so you gotta call me mom.
Anna Marie and Charmaine, now living with Rose, were still not free from the criticism, beatings, and other form of punishment that they were getting with their father. Anna Marie was known as being generally submissive and emotional, while Charmaine would frequently anger Rose by not showing any signs of distress or tears, no matter how severely she was physically abused. So just to clear that up, like, Rose comes into this and she's like, oh, these girls are clearly being neglected. I need to help them. I need to do this and that and the other. And then she sort of adapts this lifestyle that Fred has, and she's now doing that to the children as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's probably also a manner of, like, she only has one biological child and she doesn't have, like, the other two kids are not her biological mm-hmm. children. So she therefore feels like she can abuse them because they're not her blood. Mm-hmm. She probably resents the woman that had these children before. And so since she's like, yeah, she's like, oh, well, you know, you're going to have to call me mom, but essentially she has no emotional connection to these children. If anything, she has resentment against these children because she's also a child herself.
Yeah, of course.
And she doesn't understand how to process things like jealousy or, you know, any of that other stuff. So, you know, instead of, she can't take it out on the biological moms, so she's going to take it out on the child.
Right. And then children. She grew up in an abusive household herself, and now she's seeing Fred, and now she's like, oh, this just must be what people do, like, to the, like, children.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So despite the years of abuse they had already suffered, Charmaine would remain adamant that it would soon be over, stating to Anna Marie, quote, Mommy will come and save me, end quote.
Oh my God.
I know. It was also noted that around this time, Charmaine would frequently tell Rose, quote, My real mommy wouldn't swear or shout at us, end quote. Like, it's very sad.
Oh my God.
I know. A childhood friend of Charmaine's called Tracy Giles would later report an incident in which she had entered the home unannounced, only to see Charmaine naked and standing on a chair, gagged with her hands bound behind her back with a belt. Next to her stood Rose with a wooden spoon in her hand.
Oh my God.
According to Tracy, Charmaine had been, quote, calm and unconcerned, end quote, while Anna Marie was stood close by with a blank look on her face. Like, it was so casual.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, that's the level of abuse that they're used to.
Mm-hmm. On March 28th, 1971, hospital records show that Charmaine had received treatment for a puncture wound to her left ankle, which was explained by Rose that was the result of a household accident.
Mm-hmm.
Shortly before Fred's prison release, Rose took Charmaine, Anna Marie, and Heather to visit him on June 15, 1971. Either on or shortly after this date, Charmaine would go missing.
No.
Tracy Giles' mother, Shirley, who lived in the upper flat of the home, stated that her two daughters had been playmates of Charmaine and Anna Marie. She stated that her family had moved away from the upper flat in April of 1971, but one day in June, she brought Tracy to visit Charmaine, only for Tracy to be told by Rose, quote, she's gone to live with her mother and bloody good riddance, end quote. So she sent her away to Rena, is what she was saying.
I was just about to ask, like, do these people not have, like, where are the neighbors? Where are the friends? Yeah. Like, where are the family? Like, where's the electricity man, you know? Mm-hmm. Where's the, I mean, the plumber. Like, did nobody see anything? Like, nobody saying anything?
No.
People are missing, disappearing, and getting abused. Like,
right. Right. It's like, it's almost like a don't ask, don't tell kind of thing, which is shitty.
Yeah.
So, hearing this, that her friend was back living with her mom, Tracy got upset. She began to cry. And Shirley would later note that this, like, conversation definitely occurred while Fred was still in prison, because he wasn't there. And she knew he was in prison. Other people would begin to inquire about the whereabouts of Charmaine, to which Rose would explain that she went back to live with Rena. When Fred was released from prison, Anna Marie would begin asking him where Charmaine went, to which he stated the same thing, she was with Rena. Anna Marie asked her father, why her mother had come to get Charmaine, but not her. You know, that's my mom too.
Yeah.
To which Fred responded, and this is fucked up, quote, she wouldn't want you, love. You're the wrong color, end quote. Like, what?
She just did it again where she leaned into the
video. I can't do like, it in person. I have to lean.
You hear what I'm fucking saying?
Oh, my God.
Like, that's fucked.
It is horrible.
Oh, my God.
So I'm sure you're not surprised. It is believed that Rose murdered Charmaine shortly before Fred's release from prison and would store her body in the coal cellar of the home to await his return. Once he was back home...
Who said that?
Sorry?
Who said that?
I'm saying it's believed. This is, like, speculation. And okay. I'll clear it up later. But once he was back home...
They said it.
They said it. Fred would bury Charmaine's nude body in the yard close to the back door, but remained adamant that he did not dismember her. So yeah, it is known that when Fred returned home, he buried Charmaine's body in the yard, but it's believed that Rose had murdered her and kept her waiting his arrival home.
Okay, so do you think that it was maybe, I don't know, I'm not going to say accidental, because clearly she would be responsible for it, but mm-hmm. like she abused her to the point of death, you think?
I'm not sure. Personally, just knowing like the whole story, I think it was intentional, but I guess you'll have to make your opinion at the end of everything, because I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah.
Because everyone has different, like, some people think that Fred killed her, but he was in jail. You know, it's a lot of speculation in this part. Mm-hmm. But yes, so unfortunately, Charmaine would be murdered and buried in the backyard. While Rena was seldom visiting her children, she did care about their well-being, and in the later half of August 1971, she would come visit to inquire about her children's whereabouts. Well, Charmaine's. It seems as though when Fred was incarcerated, Rose was not allowing Rena to visit her kids or even talk to them, so I guess when he came back, she's like, okay, now that he's back, I'm gonna go fucking find out what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm sure that she was abusing her that whole time. Abusing the kids this whole time. She didn't want Rena knowing.
Of course. So Fred's sister-in-law, named Christine, would later recall that Rena seemed depressed and extremely anxious about her children's welfare. I think you're right. She was, like, being, like, she was not allowed to know. Mm-hmm. She would finally locate Fred and Rose and confront them, likely to discuss or demand custody of her daughters. This would be the final time that Rena was seen alive.
Again? Oh my God.
That's terrible.
So he has killed the girlfriend, the little girlfriend, and then now the daughter is dead, and now Rena?
Yes.
Oh my God.
It is believed that Rena was murdered via strangulation, most likely in the back seat of Fred's vehicle. And I say it's believed because, again, a lot of these bodies have been discovered, but as far as like what happened to lead them to death, like, it's all hearsay. On January 29th, 1972, Fred and Rose would get married now that he's a free man.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's like, oh, let me just kill my wife. Let's go get married. Mm-hmm.
The ceremony would take place at the Gloucester Registrar office, with Fred declaring himself as a bachelor on the paperwork. You're gross.
Hilarious.
Well, I'm a bachelor. I'm not married. Never have been. Thanks. No family.
He's not an eligible one.
No family or friends were involved with this marriage either, aside from Fred's brother John, who acted as best man. John's just a loyal motherfucker.
I guess so.
Several months later, Rose would become pregnant with their second child, and the family would move once again. Initially, the three-story home was rented by others, and many of the upper floors were converted into rented apartments to supplement household income. To make sure his family had some privacy, they were on the bottom floor. Fred would install a kitchen and washroom on their floor to ensure that they did not need to be bothered by other people in the upstairs area. Mm-hmm. He also told the other lodgers that only he and his family were able to enter the garden area. On June 1st, 1972, Rose West would give birth to the couple's second daughter, May June, aptly named due to the fact that she was most likely in labor in the months of May and June. It's not.
That's so creative.
It's so creative. But it's M-A-E, all right? She did a little bit of work.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
It was May, June.
May, June, July, yeah. August. Okay.
Shortly after giving birth to her second child, Rose would begin working as a sex worker, operating from an upstairs room at their home.
Again, part of the pattern. Mm-hmm.
In addition to
Does she also cheat on Fred with a man named John?
Probably.
Or just a John?
In addition, yeah, it's his brother this time, Brother John. In addition to her prostitution, Rose would also engage in casual sex with both male and female lodgers in the home and people who Fred encountered during his work. But he knew about this. Like, it wasn't like she was hiding this from him.
Well, I'm sure, like, he doesn't care about her as long as she's getting paid. Mm-hmm. Get the money up front.
Rose would be known around this time to brag frequently about how no man or woman could ever completely satisfy her. Like, you're gross. Like, no one needs to know that.
You're done. No one needs to know.
On top of this, Rose was known for being particularly physically harsh when engaging in sex with women. She would gradually increase the brutality to which she subjected her partner, including partially suffocating them or inserting large sex toys into various areas to inflict pain.
Oh my God.
If the women resisted this or expressed any fear or concern, this would make Rose really excited. She would usually respond to any concerns by stating, quote, "Aren't you woman enough to take it?" End quote. Like, fuck you.
Oh my God.
I'm woman enough to tell you to fuck off. Like, get away from me.
Jeez Louise. That's sick.
To many of the women involved in sex with both Rose and Fred, it became apparent that the two of them took particular pleasure in taking women beyond their sexual limits. In order to satisfy their fetishes, the couple would create a large collection of bondage and restraining devices, magazines, and photographs. They would later expand their collection to include videos depicting bestiality and graphic child sexual abuse, excuse me. Yeah, so it's like, and again, it seems like it escalates quickly, but it's like this couple, they're feeding off of each other. And with their shitty upbringings, like, they're just getting worse together, you know? And I'm sure he has a lot of influence in that. The room that Rose used for her sex work would become known as, quote, Rose's room, end quote. And it had several hidden peepholes, allowing Fred to watch her with her clients.
Ew. Oh my God. Oh, he's like a cuckold type of guy. It's so gross. But still, I think that she's not a very creative person. She named her daughter May June and now her room is Rose's room.
Yeah, right. And by the way, not shaming anybody for their sexual fetishes, but as long as it's consensual, and apparently this is not consensual with these women, like, clearly.
Right. Kink shaming is my kink. Yeah. So, kidding. But no, I mean, yeah, not to kink shame anyone. I mean, do you, but, you know,
within reason.
It's when it is that, you know, these clients of hers are probably people who want to keep something like that private and not be known, like a well-known thing. So she's essentially blackmailing to get sexual gratification out of them. I feel like.
Exactly.
Like, she could at any point be like, well, you're going to do what I say because I'll tell everyone.
Yeah.
You know, right. Kind of a thing. You know, nobody wants to be outed.
And it's also like, everyone's doing it. Like, why not? You know?
Yeah.
On top of the peepholes, Fred would also install a baby monitor in the room in which he could listen from anywhere in the home. The room also included a private bar and a red light installed outside that would allow people to know when Rose was using the room. Like, don't come in. Gross.
She had her own red light district.
Yeah. Lastly, there was only one key to this room, and Rose was known to wear it around her neck at all times. Like, no one else was allowed in there besides her and her client at the time.
She sounds like a villain of, like, a storybook.
Yeah. Villain origin story.
Yeah, it's like Sweeney Todd, H.H. Holmes, Rose's Room, you know.
Rose's Room. Double R. So due to the fact that she was making most of the money, Rose was in charge of all of the money that her and Fred made, and most of it would go to home improvements, quote unquote.
Ugh. Okay.
By 1977, Rose's father, Bill, had come to at least tolerate her and Fred's marriage. He would reluctantly become civil with Fred, and the two would eventually open a cafe together that they named the Green Lantern. LOL. The business would not work out very well, and the men would soon find themselves not being able to pay the bills to keep it afloat. So once Bill discovered that his daughter was engaging in prostitution, he did what any father would do in this situation, and he would go visit her himself for his own pleasure.
Oh my God.
Isn't that fucking disgusting? When I wrote that, I was like, oh my God, I literally cannot believe that. He's like, you're dead to me. I don't want to see you. You're not allowed in my household. Oh, but let's have sex really quick. I'll pay you for it. Like, that is so fucking gross.
As long as it's not in my house. Oh my God, that is so disgusting.
Gross.
What a fucking loser. Yeah.
But, and then, you know, that's the only reason that he, like, was trying to be chummy with fucking Fred.
No, well, yeah, I mean, it sounds like more like he's, like, a jealous ex-boyfriend than he is a father.
Exactly.
It's so gross.
By 1983, Rose was known to have given birth to 8 children, at least 3 of whom were fathered by her clients. Yeah.
Johns.
Yes. They were all named John. Although they were not all his, Fred would willingly accept the children as his own and falsely told them that the reason their skin was darker than their siblings was because his great-grandmother was black.
What the fuck?
Like,
that's not how that
right,
works.
And you're such an idiot. Like, so stupid. And, you know, he doesn't care about these children. He's going to keep them because it makes him look like a good guy because he has all these kids. You know, it's not for any other reason for his other than his own pleasure.
No, of course. And then, and if anything, it's a cycle of abuse because he's going to continue to abuse the children psychologically and physically. And, you know, it benefits him to make these children feel like, oh, my dad's so great. He accepted me even though I'm not his or whatever it is. Or I am his biological child in order to, like, lull them into this false sense of security. Mm-hmm. It's just gross.
Exactly. When each of these children reached the age of 7, similarly to Fred's upbringing, they were assigned daily chores to perform in the house. They were rarely allowed to socialize outside of the household unless one of their parents were there. They were also made to follow strict guidelines, with severe punishment, usually physical, being the penalty for not following the rules. I know. It's just like the same thing. You're right, the cycle of abuse.
Yeah.
The vast majority of the physical beatings came from Rose, with some coming from Fred. In one instance, the eldest daughter, Heather, and her younger brother, Stephen, would run away from home to escape the violence. However, the two would return home after several weeks of sleeping at friends' homes or outside, and they were both beaten upon returning home.
Oh, for returning home?
For returning home.
This is literally the reason I left. Mm-hmm. And now you're going to continue to do it as soon as I get back?
Right. Between 1972 and 1992, the West children were admitted to the accident and emergency department of local hospitals 31 times.
For, like, various injuries or investigations surrounding their physical injuries?
Yes. Each time, the injuries were explained away as accidents, and none would ever be reported to social services. That's negligence.
That's what I'm... Who the fuck is...
Negligence.
Who the fuck is not saying anything? Negligence.
On another occasion, Stephen was mopping the floor with a cloth, and Rose accidentally stepped into the bowl of water he had been using. In response, Rose...
And they're just... What? Sorry. There just happened to be a toaster in the water.
God, that's terrible. No, this is not funny, though.
She slipped and she accidentally fell. Her head ended up in the oven. Sorry. She fell. It was an accident.
In response, Rose would hit Stephen over the head with the bowl and then repeatedly kicked him in the head and chest while shouting, quote, "You did that on purpose, you little swine," end quote. Like, yeah, I strategically placed this bowl of water that I'm using to clean right in the way of your big fat foot. Like, no. On another occasion, Rose became enraged about a missing kitchen utensil, and in response, grabbed a knife she had been using to cut meat, repeatedly inflicting light cuts on May's chest, covering it in knife wounds.
What the fuck is wrong with this person?
While this was happening, May was reportedly shouting, quote, "No, Mom, no, Mom," end quote, as Stephen and Heather stood by helplessly. The torture of the children in the home would only get worse from here on out. In September of 1972, Rose and Fred led 8-year-old Anna Marie to the cellar at their home, where she was forced to undress. Anna would initially hesitate to undress, causing Rose to snatch her dress and tear it from her body. Anna Marie was then restrained and raped by her father, with Rose actively encouraging the act. Following this, Rose followed Anna Marie to the bathroom and handed her a towel to clean up, stating, quote, "I'm sorry. Everybody does it to every girl. It's a father's job. Don't worry and don't say anything to anybody," end quote.
Oh my, I have to leave. I have to get out of here. This is disgusting.
No, it's gross. Like, it's a father's job to protect his fucking children, not to abuse them.
That's like, so gross. Ugh.
Rose and Fred would go on to make it clear that this would not be the first time this would happen, and if Anna Marie said anything to anyone, that they would beat her. Rose would occasionally take it upon herself to sexually assault Anna Marie on her own, and took extreme gratification in binding her to different things before encouraging Fred to assault her. And it gets, like, much more detailed from there, but I just couldn't even put it in here.
Right.
From the age of 13, Fred and Rose would force Anna Marie to prostitute herself within the household. However, the couple would tell clients that Anna Marie was 16. Because that's better.
Well,
they're like, oh, she's 16? Cool.
It's the UK, though. They can drink at 16, I'm pretty sure.
I guess. That's still gross. Rose was always present in the room when this occurred, mostly to ensure that Anna did not reveal her true age. On one occasion, when Anna Marie was about 13 or 14, Rose took her to a local pub and insisted that she drink several glasses of barley wine. Several hours later, Fred would arrive at the pub to pick the girls up. Once they had left, Anna Marie was pushed into the van and beaten by Rose, who asked her, quote, "Do you think you could be my friend?" end quote. Like, oh, I'm sorry, before she was sexually assaulted by both of her parents in the vehicle. So it's like, you brought me out, you're acting like we're all cool, you're giving me drinks, like you're a cool mom, and then you're, like, berating me for thinking that you're, like, a cool person? Or what?
She's got, again, this is a teenager, like, she has a teenager's mind, and she's stunted at that age, just like Fred. They're both stunted at a very young teenage, and they don't know how to process emotions, like, in a way that's not demoralizing to someone else.
Yeah, it's absolutely horrible. In October of 1972, the West family would hire a 17-year-old Carolyn Owens to be a nanny for the children.
Oh, okay, she's gonna die.
I know, if you heard the date 1992 earlier, I did say that, but I was just giving a general, now we're back to 1972, because I was trying to say how many times they had gone in within 20 years. So now we're back in 72. Carolyn had visited her boyfriend one night and was hitchhiking home when Rose and Fred picked her up. Hearing that Carolyn did not have a good relationship with her stepfather and was looking for a job to get away from him, the West would offer her part-time employment as a nanny for three of their children, and even promised that they would drive her home each Tuesday. Several days later, Carolyn would move into the home with the West family. She would be placed in a room with Anna Marie, whom she would immediately notice was, quote, very withdrawn, end quote. Rose would explain to Carolyn, who had inquired about the amount of men who were coming and going, that she was a skilled masseuse. And the happy endings are my specialty.
Ew, gross.
Well,
just want to say from, like, Ghost, it just reminds me of Whoopi Goldberg when she's like, Molly, you in danger, girl. You gotta get your life together. Get out of there. What are you doing?
Awful. Ugh. But, like, how is she supposed to know any better? You know, like, these people are clearly good at masking their true selves.
Yeah.
And they're clearly good at being fake, you know?
And I guess that with, you know, her not having the full realization of what she got into until she met Anne Marie, you know?
Mm-hmm, exactly. According to Carolyn, Fred also told her that he was skilled in performing abortions should she ever find herself in need of one.
Just, you know, foreshadowing.
What an odd thing to say.
Jeez Louise.
What an odd thing to fucking say.
Ugh.
Fred would talk to Carolyn about sex almost constantly, and it became clear that something was off when Fred told her that the women whom he had performed abortions on were usually so satisfied that they would offer him sex in return. That didn't fucking happen. Like, that did not fucking happen.
That is a serious delusion.
You are so gross. Like, that is delulu at its finest. Like, you are nasty.
I thought you were going to say that he was like, oh yeah, all the abortions I performed were on my own family.
Oh, that's gross. No, he didn't say that. Well, I don't know. He might say that at some point.
That's probably where he gets the majority of his experience, which is gross.
That's true, which is really gross. So Rose and Fred would quickly begin making sexual advances towards Carolyn, but she was not interested in taking them up on it. Carolyn would announce her intentions to leave the home, and she would quit returning to her home. However, Rose and Fred knew that Carolyn was commonly hitchhiking in a certain area, and together they would come up with a plan to abduct her. So she got out, she left, she's home.
Yeah.
But she's still hitchhiking. Mm-hmm. Not to blame her at all, no. I'm just saying, they know this.
And it was very popular in the 60s and 70s, too.
Of course, yeah. Fred would state that he initially asked Rose if she would be willing to assist him in the abduction, to which she agreed. On December 6th, 1972, Rose and Fred would come upon Carolyn on the side of the road. They would lure her into their vehicle with apologies for their conduct, and they offered her a ride home. Initially, Carolyn believed that the apologies were sincere and essentially kind of gaslit herself into thinking that she was just misreading their initial advances.
That's so scary.
I know. She's like, well, I must just be like, I mean, they're really cool people. Like, what maybe, the heck? I was maybe just being
Yeah, maybe I was just paranoid. Maybe I haven't had enough life experience mm-hmm. that I don't know if mm-hmm. this is the way adults are.
Rose would hop in the back seat with Carolyn, stating that she wanted a, quote, girl's chat as Fred drove. Shortly after getting in the back seat, Rose would begin fondling Carolyn as Fred asked her if she had engaged in sex with her boyfriend earlier that evening. Like, he wanted to know if she had recently had sex, which is gross. Ugh. When Carolyn began to protest, Fred stopped the car and began referring to her as bitch. He would then punch her into unconsciousness before Rose bound and gagged her with a scarf and duct tape.
Oh my god!
Carolyn would be given a drugged cup of tea to drink before being gagged once again, and Rose and Fred would both begin sexually assaulting her. At one point, Fred made a comment on the appearance of Carolyn's genitals, and then began hitting her in that area with a leather
belt.
Oh
my god.
When Carolyn screamed, Rose would smother her with a pillow and continue the assault. Ugh, so horrible. At this point, Carolyn realized the gravity of the situation she was in and would stop resisting, hoping that it would benefit her. The following morning, one of the children would knock on the door that Carolyn was restrained in, and she would scream out for
help. Oh my god, what is happening?
So they took her back to the house when she was unconscious. Fred would come into the room and threaten Carolyn by telling her that he would keep her locked up in the cellar and allow his, quote, black friends, end quote, to abuse her. And when they were finished, he would bury her body beneath, quote, the paving stones of Gloucester, end quote. Which is really fucking
I'm awesome. In shock right now.
Fred, yeah. Fred then claimed that he had killed hundreds of young girls, adding that Carolyn had only been brought back to the home for, quote, Rose's pleasure, end quote. And that's where we're going to stop for part one.
I am fucking gooped, gagged. I am, what is happening?
Right. So we're stopping there for part one. It just gets worse from here, y'all. And obviously these people are fucking monsters. It just gets more and more like you have your hands on your face. Like you can't even fucking
I'm
talk.
Shocked.
Like what the fuck? It is plot twist after plot twist. And we just simply don't have time to make this less than a three-parter. So we're going to end here. And we will see you guys in a week. For part two, and by the time you hear part two, I will be in Alaska,
so
I'm really excited. But we're going to go ahead and cut it here. Do you have anything else before we finish?
I don't. I can't wait to record the next one. This is insane. This is insane.
Ugh. Yeah, and then as far as mental health and all that stuff that we usually talk about, we'll do that at the end of part three, just because we can recap everything at the end of that, and we'll be able to kind of dive deeper into that. But very clearly, like, a lot of abuse from the start. You know, we see the cycle of abuse that obviously turns into shitty situations like this sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
And it's up to people, you know, most of the time to break that cycle. And unfortunately, that does not happen in certain situations. And it's just sick. It's just fucking sick.
I think especially since they continue to, they're constantly pushing each other to perform these abusive acts on others. And they have... accompaniment in that, you know, they get essentially like support. It's negative support, but support in that. And it's encouraged. And, you know, you don't feel like, I'm sure they both know that it's wrong. I'm not saying that they don't, but with the added pressure of someone else saying that it's not wrong, it's just, I mean, it'll continue to happen. Yeah. Yeah. One of them, like I said, trips and falls inside of an oven or jumps off a cliff by the end of this. So we'll see.
Oh, man. Well, unfortunately, in part two, there is a lot more horrible crime to come. And then, of course, in part three, we will talk about the end of their reign of terror, if you will. But yeah, come visit us again next week for part two, and we will see you guys then.
All right.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye. If you want great tasting meals daily, but can't find the time to shop or even cook, we have the solution for you. Fresh Meal Plan is a convenient, easy way to create custom meals delivered right to your door. With hundreds of rotating meals each week, there's always something new to look forward to. Many of their meals are ready in 3 minutes or less, so you don't have to spend all night cooking. Just select your meals, heat, eat, and bon appetit. Click the link in our show notes today for an exclusive offer with Fresh Meal Plan and create the perfect menu for you.